If you've ever felt a sudden urge to give money to a politician, but you just couldn't get to your checkbook or your computer in time, well, the Federal Election Commission is getting ready to help. The commission today might approve a proposal to allow contributions via mobile phone. Here's NPR's Peter Overby.
Contributions by text message have done very well for some charities. After the 2010 earthquake in Haiti, the American Red Cross used texting to raise $32 million in donations of $10 each. So this may be the technology that makes impulse giving easy in politics. A big campaign rally with rousing speeches and the energy of the moment, and you've got your cell phone.
There's a long tradition in American politics of pass-the-hat events.
Brett Capel is a lawyer for the two consultants and the payment process company that asked the FEC to do this.
Literally pass someone's hat around, or more recently a plastic bucket, and just ask people to throw in whatever they can afford, you know, a couple of dollars. I mean, that's really all we're doing is taking that and then updating it for the digital era.
The idea's been around for 2 years. The main hang-up, federal law sets deadlines for processing campaign contributions, and it takes longer than that to get mobile contributions through the billing cycle of wireless providers. There's going to be a fix for that. The Obama and Romney campaigns have both endorsed the proposal, not that it will come cheap. The processing fee will likely be 20% to 25% of the contribution. So that $5 you give to your favorite candidate might be only $3.75 or $4 by the time the campaign gets it. Peter Overby, NPR News, Washington.
Back in 1980, one of the biggest questions on the mind of this nation was, who shot J.R.? J.R. Ewing, that is, the villainous lead in the popular evening TV soap Dallas. The show was so popular that more than 350 million people worldwide turned on their TVs to watch the episode that revealed who fired that fateful shot. NPR's Allison Keyes reports that now the TNT cable network is rebooting Dallas, hoping to win even a small fraction of that passionate audience.
The trials and tribulations of the fabulously rich Ewings and their sumptuous South Fork Ranch captivated viewers for 13 years.
It stops right now, JR. Pamela's my wife, and you're going to treat her with respect.
Now, listen here, little brother.
No, I won't listen.
From the first show in 1978, brothers Bobby and J.R. Ewing were the faces of an epic battle between good and evil.
You can stop that little brother nonsense, too, because that stops from here on in.
Hold on.
In the reboot, which begins this week, Larry Hagman's character J.R. is back, and the ruthless rivalry with his brother, played by Patrick Duffy, continues.
Bobby was always a fool. Stubborn as a mule.
But in this version, the Ewing sons take up their father's rivalry. J.R.'s son, John Ross, played by Josh Henderson, all but twiddles his villain's whiskers after striking oil on the ranch.
I hit a 2 billion barrel reserve. But Bobby won't hear a drilling.
And surprise, surprise, John Ross has issues with Bobby's adopted son, Christopher, played by Jesse Metcalf.
We've been on opposite tracks since we were born. And for what? We're family.
We ain't family, bro. I'm a Ewing.
For a mad moment, I thought that maybe Bobby's son would be the bad guy and the JR's son would be the good guy.
Cynthia Sidre developed the new show, but
I pitched that and people just, like, blanched.
Sidre says there are changes in the 2012 version. The female characters are stronger, smarter, and more powerful. Linda Gray's character Sue Ellen is not only back, but running for governor. And this Dallas has Latino characters, speaking Spanish, and inhabiting some of the seats of power.
I would have been aware if everyone was white. Okay, that would have just stuck out, like, that's not what Dallas looks like.
Plus, this version takes the Ewings into the 21st century with a foray into alternative energy sources. But oil is still the family's lifeblood as J.R.'s son John Ross and Bobby Ewing square off over drilling at the fabled South Fork.
This will make us richer than we ever imagined, Uncle Bobby.
It'll change everything.
I am sick to death of this family devouring itself over money.
I promised Mama there would be no drilling on South Fork.
Bobby is protecting Miss Ellie's legacy.
Miss Ellie was J.R. and Bobby's mom, who tried to be a calming influence on her sons in the original show. Patrick Duffy says in the new show, his character tries to stop the family's constant strife. He says both he and Bobby have matured.
I think that's the fundamental thing you have to acquire as you age, which is patience. And it's the one thing, thank goodness, young people don't have, because you need that exuberance in those early years, and that's what Bobby had in the beginning.
And that's what his son Christopher, as played by Jesse Metcalf, has now, along with his father's strong moral character.
I think he has a bit of a shorter fuse. He's quick to get angry. You know, he's very passionate. You know, he doesn't have a problem, you know, fighting for what he believes in.
Neither does John Ross, as played by Josh Henderson, who says his character is a nice guy with parental issues who will do whatever it takes to measure up.
He's trying to stake his claim in the Ewing legacy and really be the man sitting at the head of the table at South Fork Ranch. And so he's got a lot of proving to do, but he knows how to do business one way, and that's the JR way. So it definitely adds a great, interesting twist.
Just because a remake like this comes with a bit of a built-in audience of previous fans doesn't mean it'll succeed. Just ask the people who tried to remake Knight Rider a few years back. That and ramped-up versions of the Bionic Woman and Charlie's Angels tanked in spectacular fashion. But the creators of the Dallas reboot are hoping that the mix of original characters and the next generation will make this show a success. Allison Keyes, NPR News.
There's a new reality show in town. It's on the TLC network. That's the network known for popular style and fashion hits like What Not to Wear and Say Yes to the Dress. Now, a new show focuses on how fashion is trying to catch up to our changing population. Clothing designed for plus-sized women. Big Brooklyn Style follows Lisa Dolan, owner of Lili's Valise, as she designs her own looks and helps her customers find looks that work for them.
I love fashion, but growing up plus-size made it really tough. I had to settle a lot. Not a single designer was out there making great plus-size clothes. You can't just take a size 2 and bring it up to a size 22 and expect it to fit correctly. So I started making clothes myself. It took a girl from Brooklyn to say, hey, you don't want to do it? I'll do it.
And Lisa Dolan joins us now. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Did you have a eureka moment when you said, look, this is something I just have to do?
There was a moment, and the recession kind of helped it. So,
okay.
Well, it's a good
more.
Thing and a bad thing. You know, recession's a bad thing, but it did force me to make my own clothes because designers stopped making clothes in the sizes that I carry in my store.
Wow, I didn't know that. So tell me a little bit more about that, what you said in the clip that we just played, that you can't just take a size 2 and bring it up to size 22 and expect it to fit correctly.
Right. What they do is they have a pattern made. Let's say it goes up to a size 12. They take the same pattern and they just extend it as if we grow and get bigger, like that big plastic man you see by the used car lot. That's not how we get bigger. You need to start a new pattern that accounts for curves, not just a big boxy item that's thrown over you. It's something that actually flatters your figure.
And what about the concept itself of kind of helping people find their way into a look that works for them?
You mean like when I have a new customer mm-hmm. in the store for the first time?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's the best. The best part of the day is the brand new customer that runs around the store like a kid in a candy store, wants everything, wants to try everything on. It just warms my heart seeing how happy they are because we do it together.
Let me just play a clip from one young woman who came into your store. Her name is Shelley King, and here it is.
My foster mother never really gave me that encouragement that I could do anything. It was a lot of body conscious things. She would always say, no man is going to want you if you're plus size and you need to lose weight. And it kind of stuck with me. Even as an adult, you still need that encouragement, you know, so.
I could be mom of clothing.
Well, you know, you two are having a nice laugh there, but you can see where this could be very emotional. Oh. You know, and just like the other programs that we mentioned on TLC, you know, What Not to Wear and Say Yes to the Dress, there's a lot of emotion around clothing. And I just wanted to know whether that's something that, you know, we're going to see a lot of on this.
Well, when you buy a new dress, and if you could fit in a contemporary size and you buy a new dress, aren't you emotional? Aren't you happy? You know, we have this woman that doesn't have that all the time. So when it does happen and they do put something on, they look in the mirror and they're like, that's me? That's an emotional moment that they have to connect with the seeing with their eyes now and how they feel.
And your show doesn't involve a lot of judgment. Sometimes, now we've interviewed the host for What Not to Wear on this program sort of previously, and one of the things we talked about is there is a fine line between
helping people and judging them and making them feel as though they're being judged. You're not in the business of judging people. You're not in the business of telling people this is...
No.
Or I don't know. How do you see that question? Because clearly there are times when I think that there are things which will not work as well on every customer, right? How do you handle that?
I'm a store. I have clothes. I have dresses. I have prints. I have fun. I have colors. I don't judge anyone that walks in that door. Everyone's allowed in. And I know people start to go to unhealthy, healthy, that whole issue. It doesn't matter to me where you're coming from. You need to go to work tomorrow. You have a party on Saturday. I'm going to dress you.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Lisa Dolan. She's the owner of the plus-size boutique Lily's Valise. She and her husband Jim star in the new TLC reality program Big Brooklyn Style. Speaking of your husband, Jim, he says in the first episode that all he wanted to do was open his own bar. How is he handling the women's clothing business? How's that going?
Yes, he has his joke. Now he's in women's clothes, which we love. Jim's great. He knows how to sell. Let me tell you something. We went shopping together many years where he stood outside that dressing room guarding a whole rack of dresses I wanted to try on, but I could only take in so many to the dressing room. He knew to protect those clothes. He knew how hard it was for me to find things when I did find them.
How do the women like having him there, though? Do they feel like, oh, no.
Are you kidding?
Yes.
They love him.
Really?
They ask him all the time, so, Jim, would you buy me a drink wearing this dress?
Does he ever say no?
Only when he offered to buy them a car.
Okay, are you going to explain that a little bit more?
Well,
when
they said, Jim, would you buy me a drink in this dress? And he said, no. And they were like, really? He's like, I buy you a car.
You know, but Lisa, you know, on a serious note there, there's a lot in the news mm-hmm. about Americans and weight. A new study projects that more than 40% of Americans will be obese by the year 2030. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the conversation is how can people be healthier and so forth. And I just, you know, gee, I'm trying to figure out a way to ask this, but do you ever...
We all want to be healthy. Mm-hmm. We all want to live lives where we're doing the right thing so that we could live longer. My husband and I'm plus size. We do yoga. We eat healthy. It doesn't just come off. Sometimes it's a lifestyle. I've been the same weight for 5 years, fluctuating here and there 5-10 pounds, but not a drastic change. And I'm not going to yo-yo anymore. I'm trying to be healthy. I take vitamins every day. We go for walks. We have yoga. We do acupuncture. We try so many different things. But again, our show is all about the clothes,
yeah.
The end.
I hear what you're saying. It's just there's an argument that the fact that there are more services and businesses out there catering to the plus size customer is not necessarily a good thing. And I know that's a hard thing to...
Listen, I've had people walking off the street say that I was advocating obesity because I had clothes to fit them. That's wrong. That is just wrong. Clothing is a necessity. Fashion is a necessity for a woman. So put them together and you have Lily's Valise.
Lisa Dolan is the star of the new TLC reality program, Big Brooklyn Style. She and her husband are owners of Lily's Valise. That's a plus-sized clothing boutique in Brooklyn. She was kind enough to join us from our bureau in New York. Lisa Dolan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Bridget Armstrong, Freddie Boswell, Bridget DeShagas, Andrew Limbong, Sanat Meshkinpour, Amitha Parashar, and Amy Ta. Our intern is Todd Whitney. Our editors are Alicia Montgomery, Ahmad Omar, and Kenya Young. Our special thanks to NPR's librarians. Our director is Arjun Hutchins. Our senior producers are Devar Ardalan and Emily Oxenschlager. The technical director is Neil Tevold. He had a hand this week from Sean Phillips and Greg Gavin. Our special thanks to engineering supervisor Kevin Langley. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior editor is Portia Robertson-Migas. Our executive producer is Tashima Walker. And remember, to tell us more, please go to npr.org and find us under the Programs tab. You can also find our podcast there. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at TellMeMoreNPR. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more tomorrow.
If you've been to the movies this summer, you might find yourself wondering who else is out there.
Our mission is to monitor extraterrestrial activity on Earth.
Men in Black 3, Prometheus, even the Avengers all seem to feature themes of space travel and, of course, aliens. Well, we couldn't think of a better person to talk to about these movies than astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's director of the Hayden Planetarium in New York City. Dr. Tyson, thanks so much for talking to us about the movies.
Thanks for having me.
So can we start with Prometheus?
Sure.
You've seen it.
I was there at 12:01.
You were eager.
12:01 the morning it premiered. I was there.
Well, the first scene, and I really don't want us to give too much away to our listeners in case they haven't seen the movies we're going to talk about, but the first scene in Prometheus, I mean, it seems to show this alien maybe planting the seeds of life on Earth, and I wonder if there's any realistic part of that whatsoever.
Well, the unrealistic part of it is that it's a humanoid alien planting DNA seeds to seed all of life on Earth. And most life on Earth is not humanoid. In fact, most life on Earth is plant and bacterial. So if they were to represent that accurately, it'd be some kind of bacterium dropping its DNA into the oceans of Earth. But there is a notion called panspermia. It's the notion that life might have begun on another planet, and this microbial life would then become a stowaway on rocks that would be cast back into space by asteroid impacts.
What is your general reaction to space movies as an astrophysicist?
I love them. The bigger the budget, the better. In the case of Prometheus, it had a name brand director, Ridley Scott, and there was some attempt to show what a future would be like. But there was a gaffe, I must tell you.
Okay.
Charlize Theron,
the actress,
in an attempt to assert how far away the ship is from Earth, says, "We're a half billion miles from Earth." And half billion, that gets you like to Jupiter. You know, that's far from Earth by our modern standards. But by the standards of 2089, no. In fact, on a screen, they showed how far away the ship was. It was 3.27 times 10 to the 14th kilometers. And so you convert that to light years, you get 35 light years. That is way farther away than from here to Jupiter. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just writing all that down. That's the number I came up with, too. Well, let's move to Men in Black 3, and I know I'm not going to be spoiling anything if I say there are a lot of aliens. And also green slime. And I mean, green slime and aliens, it goes back to my, you know, one of my favorite movies, Ghostbusters. You know, I've been slimed. But is there any reason to think that aliens would be slimy?
Yeah, every time they shot an alien, it blew up into a green mess. And none of them had red slime. And I'm intrigued by that because there's another way to carry oxygen through your body. You don't just need the iron, which accounts for your red blood. You can use copper. In fact, shellfish use copper, and so does Spock on Star Trek.
Hmm.
And that's why they have green blood.
Well, in Men in Black 3, they go back in time to the launch of Apollo 11, of course, a very notable event in space history. Did the filmmakers depict it accurately?
I got to tell you, I was so moved by how they portrayed 1969. It wasn't just there's a launch. They went into the streets and you saw the newspaper headlines leading up to the launch and you saw the interviews and you saw the small black and white television and you realized that was a time when people were dreaming about tomorrow.
Hmm.
Now, they did get something wrong, I gotta tell you. So the night before the launch of Apollo 11, they show the moon in the sky and it's a full moon. The moon was so not full the night before the launch. It was a skinny, itty-bitty crescent the night before they launched to the moon.
I want to bring up a little more tape from one of the movies that we wanted to cover with you, and that's The Avengers.
Loki's beyond reason, but he is my brother. What are you asking me to do?
I'm asking you to join us.
You people are so petty and tiny.
You love to tweet, and you tweeted quite a bit about the movies, and one thing that kind of struck me was that you said there actually is a realistic explanation for the power of this hammer that Thor was carrying around.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's awesome that he's the only one who could lift it, and they say where that hammer came from. It's forged from the core of a dying star, and a dying star, if it's of a certain variety, could be made of neutron matter, and if it is, it is really dense and really heavy. Nobody's picking that thing up. You need the power of Thor to wield it.
Well, let's get ourselves some Thor hammers if we have time.
And we'll do a little, do a Thor hammer dance.
Dr. Tyson, thanks so much for talking movies and aliens with us.
Thank you. Happy to be on.
Neil deGrasse Tyson is director of the Hayden Planetarium in New York. His most recent book is Space Chronicles: Facing the Ultimate Frontier.